welcome to another episode of The Two Brandons. This is Brandon Easton.
And this is Brandon Thomas.
Awesome. And today we're going to be talking about the video game industry, our thoughts and feelings on the history of the industry, things we like, and where everything is going. Now, I'm not claiming to be an expert on video gaming. I'm just somebody who's been playing video games since about 1981.
Oh.
And
I was born in 1980.
Oh, see, that's a goddamn shame. Anyway, my grandmother had bought me an Atari 2600 back in 1981 or so, and I loved it. And the reason why it's really interesting today, because I just came from GameStop, which is like basically the first floor of hell. And if anybody who ever shops at GameStop, you all know what I'm talking about. It's probably the worst place on earth. It is the most, shilling place I've ever been, in the sense that all they try to do is get more money out of you. And they're not even being slick about it. They just keep trying to get money out of you. And it's just like to the point where I'm a complete jerk to these people. And I know it's not their fault. But and I usually don't treat retail people poorly because I just don't do that. But GameStop is the only place where I get really nasty because I just want to buy something and leave. And they just want you to reserve something or get their stupid Game Informer subscription or I don't know. It's just that they talk and try to sell you stuff. And I'm like, dude, I just want to buy my game and leave. You know, that's all I want. Like, I don't want anything else. So today I had a little situation where I went into GameStop and the lady starts going on her spiel and I'm like, look, every game today sucks. Let me just buy this. And then that shut her up. So that was fantastic. That was my day. That's pretty much my whole day.
Well, I haven't been into GameStop for maybe a couple of months, but you came in with the Atari 2600, right? You're saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I came in with, you know, with the original Nintendo. We did have, I feel like my parents had an older, I don't know if it was the 2600, but one of the earlier Ataris was like in an old box somewhere in the attic. But my first real exposure to video games was that original Nintendo. And I still remember the first one that I got, we had put it on layaway at, I don't know if anybody remembers it, but it was a department store called Zaire.
Yep.
And you know, me and my mother, we put my first Nintendo on layaway. And so after a few months of paying, you know, making payments on it, I got to take home the original Nintendo. And this is the one, the Super Mario Brothers Duck Hunt light gun. So I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with it, with that that package. But that yep. was really my entry into the world of video games. And even though I really don't have the time to play as much as I probably would like to, but it's weird. It's always important to me to have some kind of gaming system in the house, even if right. it's collecting dust for, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like it connects me to my youth in certain ways. So I always try to make sure I at least have one gaming system in the house at one time. So that was really my introduction to the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that because, yeah, I mean, I love the Nintendo generation. I mean, by the time we got to Nintendo, it was a very interesting time because you saw the industry go through this massive change. And then, you know, the Atari years died off. The Commodore 64 years died off. The Intellivision years died off. And the next thing you know, you had this massive explosion with Nintendo, which was from Japan, of course. And we all learned, or at least I did. I mean, I learned how big gaming was at that point because during the 2600 years, it was kind of a thing where there was an island of gamers. Like, there'd be a couple of people you know here, and we talk about games, and a couple of people there. But it wasn't this massive kind of hobby. It was a thing that very few people were into, generally. And you had to go to the arcades in your neighborhood to have that social experience. And really, that's what I miss. I mean, if there was one thing I could bring back from the 80s, other than a kind of general innocence and lack of cynicism, I would bring back the arcade experience, because Dave and Buster's is not the arcade experience, you know. You know, but Nintendo was great. I mean, I had the package that came with Duck Hunt and Gyromite.
Oh, okay.
Which that stupid little robot, Rob the Robot.
I remember the robot.
Yeah, and I got that. And then what really blew my mind was Castlevania and The Legend of Zelda, because both games were, at the time, innovative. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today, which is, like, you know, there's a massive lack of innovation in the current gaming marketplace. Like, I look at video games, and they're all pretty much variations on a theme. It's like, oh, here's a shooter. I'm a military shooter, and I'm going into some situation to shoot everything. Or I'm in space, and I'm shooting everything. So, you know, you got Halo and Dead Space, and to a lesser extent, Gears of War. And then you have, you know, Call of Duty. Then you have
Medal of Honor.
You've got Battlefield. You've got Spec Ops, The Line. You've got the Ghost Recon series. And it's just like the same thing over and over again. And every now and then, something like Ico or Katamari Damacy or Journey or...
Akami.
Oh, yeah, Akami. Yeah, exactly, with the wolf, right. You know, there's all these games that come out every now and then that really shake things up. But I can't really think of any massive new innovation that's come along that's made me really sit up and say, hey, I've got to jump on board. I mean, the last thing I remember that really blew my mind was the Sega Dreamcast.
Because I adored my Sega Dreamcast.
I mean, it was a great, fun, innovative and interesting system. I mean, a lot of people don't remember this, but the Dreamcast was the system that really went online first. The only issue was that everybody had dial-up. So there was only, you know, so much you could do with dial-up. And I could be wrong about that, but, you know, when a Dreamcast dropped, I don't remember there being any other system that could get online. And the PlayStation 2 came out a little bit later, and they also had online capability, but not on the same level. So the Dreamcast, to me, like Shenmue and, you know, stuff like that was the last real wave of innovation that I can think of. I mean, the animation and the graphics in the new generations are fantastic,
yes.
But when it gets down to pure gameplay, I don't really find – I mean, of course, Halo was innovative, and Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic was very innovative. And I think that the PlayStation P – or the PSP, the PlayStation Portable, in its inception was innovative, but its execution was very poor. In fact, I mean, it was so poor that I stopped buying Sony products. I mean, I haven't owned a Sony system since the PlayStation 2, I don't really plan on – and I get into it with Sony fanboys all the time, but it's just that – I don't feel, you know, Sony or PlayStation developing has gone that well compared to what Sega was doing and compared to what Microsoft has done. So, you know, I know a lot of people are Sony hardcores, and they're going to hate what I'm saying, but I just can't get into anything Sony has to offer. I mean, Infamous and was it God of War as exclusives were, and Killzone were not enough for me to jump ship to the PlayStation 3. So, That's my take on that as far as my issues with the contemporary industry. What do you have to say?
Well, I try to, you know, keep stock of actually what's going on, even if I have this entire shelf of games, and a lot of them are still in plastic, just like a lot of my Blu-rays. And I have, you know, a bunch of those games that you just mentioned I still have in the plastic, God of War, Infamous. And I do have a PlayStation 3, but a big reason that I got that was because I wanted the Blu-ray player.
Okay.
And primarily right now what I play is sports games. I mean, Madden, and I'm a big fan of MLB The Show. So nice. That's probably about all I can steal some. I have stolen some time for the first Arkham Asylum or Arkham City. What's interesting to me is this, this impending decision that we're all going to have to make about this new wave of systems.
Right.
And I always feel like when the further we are away from it, the more I feel that I don't want to be interested. But once we get a little closer, I'll start to get that urge again. Like, oh, maybe I should get the PS4. But It's good just a lot of the things that, some of it's speculation, some of it has been confirmed, but a lot of the things that, we're hearing about the new systems kind of suggest to me that I may just stick with my, current PS3 and, you know, waiting until all the games go to $10 and stock up with more things I probably won't have time to play. But
right. I like that.
I think that, you know, with the next generation, I'm just interested to see, like you said, the innovation. I think that the gaming industry is changing a lot, and I don't think that these companies are just going to be able to churn out, you know, prettier shooters and convince people that they need to spend $300, $400 to buy these new systems. And on top of that, this thing where the companies want to make it harder and harder for you to buy used games and to kind of destroy that as a secondary marketplace, while at the same time refusing to budge on their restrictive pricing offering you a game that you can play longer than 10 hours and it's over. Yeah, and 10 hours is probably... I think that would be considered a long game, but I remember, you know, because we're a little older, I guess, but I remember when it would take you 30, 40 hours of playtime to actually complete a game, and now you can sit down and clear an entire game in a day and a half, and I think that's one of the main problems that the video game industry is facing. They have really high price points because development costs continue to skyrocket, and it's difficult to provide some type of experience that's going to take longer for someone, you know, than watching the Lord of the Rings movies back to back.
Right. Wow. Yeah, that is 10 hours.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you know, I don't know if you saw the PlayStation 4 presentation.
I saw it. I was excited about seeing it. I'll be honest.
Okay. I saw it and I was bored out of my pants. And it's not just because I hate Sony, but I wanted to give it a chance. And I was sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, there's nothing so far that I saw in that presentation that make me want to go out and buy the PlayStation 4. I mean, I'm not going to buy the PlayStation 4 anyway. Mm-hmm. But if there was any slight 1/100th of a 1/1000th of a chance that I'd buy it, it was erased by that presentation. I mean, the only thing that I'm really looking forward to, and that's not going to be just on the PlayStation 4, is that game Destiny that Bungie's developing. That
looks
absolutely amazing. And Microsoft hasn't done their presentation yet. But the thing that does trouble me, and they did say that they weren't going to block used games, but we all know that what they're trying to do right now is eliminate you actually owning your own disc. They want you to license the game from them, and if you get out of line, they just turn off the game, and you don't get to play it. And I think that's a reprehensible concept. And I don't know who came up with this business model, but it's going to, I mean, really, it's going to piss off a lot of people because already the idea of it has pissed me off.
Right.
And, you know, they've already, I don't know if the Xbox 720 is going to be called 720 or not, but I don't know if they've said that they're not going to block used games. Because I know PlayStation dropped a press release saying it was a rumor that they were going to block used games or used content. But the general idea is that when you buy a PlayStation 4 game, or whatever, 720, whatever it's going to be called, that you can only play it on your system.
Right.
And I think that I don't know if this has been 1,000% confirmed, but everything I've read claims that when you open that game and you plug it in, it's only going to work at your house. And What's that?
It's a terrible idea.
Yeah, it's going to be tethered to one system. And that, to me, to one console. And I'm thinking to myself, this is just one of the worst things I've ever heard. But reality is, all of media is heading in that direction. It's not just video games. I mean, movies and television shows are going to be, you know, streamed the same way in the future. But it doesn't mean I have to like that.
Right.
And that's really concerning me, because if visually, what I saw from the PlayStation 4 presentation is where we're going. There was nothing I saw that blew my mind. There was nothing that I saw that made me think, oh boy, this is something that's going to be a game changer. I mean, everything pretty much looked like slightly upscaled versions of what we have today. And I mean, the 360 and PlayStation 3, based on, you know, I play 360 all the time, but the PlayStation 3 has some amazing stuff on it, as does the 360 visually. And I don't know what's so great about what I saw so far. I mean, a couple of screenshots and screen captures, and even some of the gameplay really did not excite me in the least. So I'm just being honest. I mean, I'm waiting for the Microsoft press conference. I'm very much looking forward to that. But if they're going to be anything like what I saw on the PlayStation 4 one, I don't know if I'm going to be spending another $400 or $500 upgrading to the next level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when I went from Xbox, the original Xbox, to the Xbox 360, I lost a lot of gameplay content, as well as saved games and things like that, that I was not able to transfer from the Xbox to the 360. And I'm still upset about that because, you know, I don't know if you ever played it, but I played Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
I've never played it.
Oh my God.
I've heard great things about it, though.
Basically, it's where the Mass Effect, because it's BioWare. So it's sort of like the Mass Effect template came from Knights of the Old Republic. And it was, as a Star Wars fan, first and foremost, it was an amazing experience. The verisimilitude of that gaming experience in the Star Wars universe was unparalleled. I mean, there hasn't been a Star Wars game since that felt like it was in that universe as much as Knights of the Old Republic was. And when I upgraded to the 360, I couldn't upgrade, I couldn't take my game with me. And I played about like 45 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where I'm not one of those people that keeps two or three gaming systems next to my TV at once. I usually retire one and then move on to the next one.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I have friends who have like all their systems lined up next to each other.
I have two, but go ahead.
Yeah, hey, you know what? It's nothing wrong with that. It's just for me, it's just the idea of jumping between different consoles. It does something to my brain, I guess. I don't know. Maybe, like I said last week, the older I'm getting, I guess I'm getting dumber because I can't focus on two separate consoles. So it's sort of like it's either Xbox or nothing else. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I mean, I guess my point being is that I would like to see something that would make me excited. And I have not been excited by anything I've seen thus far. And I don't know where this stuff is going. You know, I mean, you know, it feels to me that they want to get as much as they can from the consumer without giving us anything in return.
Right, right. The law of diminishing returns, I suppose.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll make my decision about the PS4 at some point in the future. But, you know, what they showed was not terribly far removed from what we have now. And I hope that they realize that they didn't show much to convince people that, you know, they need to invest another $400 or $500 in a new system that is going to restrict their gameplay. I mean, one of the big things when I got my original Nintendo, my next door neighbor also had a Nintendo, and if we weren't at my house, we were at his house. So this idea that once I buy the new Madden, it's going to be locked onto my system, and you can never take the disc anywhere else and use it or access any of your gameplay, it's not going to work. It's not sustainable long term. I mean, I know that everyone is very obsessed with online gameplay now, And that's how, these companies are helping to alleviate the fact that these games are getting more and more insular and the playing of them is getting more and more isolated ever before. I mean, I just remember the days when Nintendo, where almost every game you would buy was a two-player game.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, even Super Mario Brothers was a two-player game.
Right.
And that type of thing is just... It's been eliminated, and I don't think online play can perfectly represent that. I mean, here's a good example. This didn't anger me as much as it did some other people, but this last year's version of Madden NFL, it eliminated a key feature that a lot of people liked, where you could play in a franchise on the same machine. Right. So, you and your brother or my friend Lee Ferguson, who drew Miranda Mercury, him and his son, you know, liked playing franchise on Madden, you know, on the same machine. And now you can't do that anymore because everything is tethered to your online ID and, you know, all of this fancy newfangled technology, we're told. But right. it's really just ways of restricting gameplay. And I don't think that that's a sustainable long-term destination for them. And it seems that that's where everyone is headed, where maybe your new console will play used games, but you won't be able to take that disc to your friend's house and play your game there. So, right. You know, it's one of those things. And, you know, whenever I talk about it, you know, I just think, are we just being like the cranky old men, you know, that want everything to be how it was in 86 or whatever. But, I just think it's going to be a tough pill for people to swallow if Sony and Microsoft's goal is to convince people to pony up another $400-$500 and try to restrict how easy it is for them to play used games, which is a huge component of the marketplace now, because let's face it, these games are too expensive. I mean, these games are $50-$60 a pop, and you can be done with them in 10 hours. So I don't begrudge anyone going to the dreaded GameStop and trading that thing in for something and having the ability to try out a new game. But you know, it's just things just continue to change in that marketplace, and eventually the companies are going to have to show us something else, because we've seen the pretty graphics, we've heard the Hollywood scores attached to the games, and It's going to have to be something else. Everybody has a Blu-ray player now, so that's not going to be a big draw for people, the fact that they can also use their PlayStation as a Blu-ray player. Everyone else has Netflix streaming, so that's also not another draw of the PlayStation or a console like it. So I very much agree with the fact that innovation, it has to be the key going forward. And if the game publishers can only show us sequels of everything, I don't think that they're going to have a very successful run.
Well, oh man, you brought up so many incredible things that I want to talk about. Let's see. Let me start at the beginning. Well, first, you did mention that we might sound like the old men. But you know what? Yes, because I think that there's a lack of human socialization that happens in gaming that was a part of the previous generation of gaming. And this kind of goes back to my whole experience in the arcade. You know, when I was a kid, you know, I hate to even say that, but, you know, between like 82 and I'd say around 90,
okay,
you know, the neighborhood arcade was kind of the spot where you could really see all the really hot games. Like, I remember seeing Dragon's Lair, which was like playing a cartoon, you know, and Space Ace. And you could not get that technology, no matter how much money you had, you could not get that technology in your home yet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how incredible, was it Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter looked on a Super Nintendo or the Sega Genesis.
It didn't look like the arcade.
It did not look like the arcade. You did not. And there's something to be said about being in a social environment with a bunch of people all mutually having the exact same experience that you don't really get in multiplayer online gaming. I mean, there is an element of people talking and being racist and calling each other the N-word online. I mean, that's like the thing to do on, like, you know, Xbox 360 and PlayStation networks. But it's not the same. I mean, I never had that negative experience in the arcade. And I met a lot of friends through through that, like people you would see flesh and blood, not gamer tags, but real people that you'd see and get to know. And I still have those friends even in my life today based on the connections we made physically in the arcade space. And I think multiplayer has its place in the world, but the fact that we have at least two generations of kids now who don't know anything other than online play or multiplayer, I mean, it's kind of scary to me. Because when I used to teach high school and middle school, and those were two different generations of kids, actually. And it blew my mind that they just didn't have the same experience of interpersonal interaction in their gaming life. It was all about putting on a headset and plopping down on in front of a television for hours on end without going outside or talking to anybody. And that bothers me a lot. You know, I don't know why it does, but it really bothers me. And I mean, game length, I mean, to switch gears in this, you know, you mentioned game length. See, for me, I mean, we're both very busy people.
Yeah.
And I know, and I'm just being honest, for me, I don't have the time in my life right now to devote to a, you know, 20 or 30 hour game. I started playing Skyrim, you know, the Elder Scrolls Skyrim, and that's supposed to be like 100 hours long. And I played 5 and I just took it back. Because I realized that what that game really, I mean, I started playing it and it was awesome. I mean, Skyrim is awesome. Don't let me tell you that. It's awesome. But for me to really enjoy that game, I would need to, like, not write anything, you know, for a year. And what, you know, and this is something that's kind of interesting. Because as I've gotten further along into my career as a writer or a creator or whatever you want to call me, I find myself not having any time for games. You know, like the games I play have to be kind of like one and done, and I'm done. Like, you know, Mass Effect I devoted time to, but the amazing thing about the Mass Effect games is that they don't really take up that much time if you go straight through the storyline. It's right. The side missions that eat up all your time if you play Mass Effect. I don't know if you did or not.
No.
But, okay.
Like it's on my list of games to buy and then not play.
Trust me. you're gonna want to play that. Especially, I mean, I don't know if you're a space opera fan, but obviously you like... Yeah, if you like space opera, dude, Mass Effect all the way. But my point is that, you know, for me as an adult, the older I get, the less time I have for gaming. So I'm a big baseball fan myself. I'm more of a fan of MLB 2K series because I played it through the Dreamcast days. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I never really gave up on that franchise. Although, I mean, I also don't have a PS3, so I couldn't play the show. You know what I mean? But, I mean, nothing against either one of them. I mean, they're both great series, whatever. But, you know, I can play through a baseball season on MLB 2K, or I could play through a football season on the Madden. I don't play basketball games anymore, but there was a time when I was a big fan of the NBA 2K series as well.
Yep.
You know, and I don't have a problem with that kind of thing, but when you play a game like Skyrim that requires you get a house, and or you can get multiple houses and residences, or you could meet people and marry them, you know, and you could do all this stuff. You know, I mean, it's just like, and you have to walk across the whole world. And the thing about it is that, like, scale-wise, like, Skyrim is probably the size of, like, southern Chicago. So if you laid that game out, you know, south side of Chicago, like, if you lay that game out as a real-world map, it would probably be that big. So I'm just like, yo, really? Like, do I really need to be walking across, you know, from, like, you know, the tip of, you know, South Side Chicago to the river? You know, I mean, really, do I really need to be doing that? I mean, come on. So I kind of look at it from that perspective, to be absolutely honest, where, I mean, for me, I do like games that do have some depth, but I also like the option of not having to do every little thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I enjoy games that are, like, you know, about 10 to 15, even 20 hours long. But when you start getting into the 30 and 40 hour experience, it turns me off because, you know.
Never finish it.
Yeah, I mean, because really, the game costs $60, right?
Right.
And the way I look at it, if you can get a dollar out of every day you play it, that's probably a good thing. But if you play the game for 10 days and you're done, that's not so good because you only got $10 out of that game. And then you try to take it back to the hell we know as GameStop, and you get like 14 cents for it. And, you know, people, you know, what are you going to do? You know, it's like you're stuck with a game that you either have to sell in the secondary market like Craigslist or eBay, or you just trade it for something that, you know, you lose half of your investment. So, you know, it's tricky. I mean, it's one of those things where I would like to have, really, more so than length, I would like replayability. You know, I'd like the fact that they have downloadable content, but the reality is I don't want to pay for downloadable content.
No.
Just because you didn't finish the game doesn't mean I need to give you an extra $10 because you didn't finish the game on launch.
And again, it's one of those things where when I hear a game is going to have a ton of downloadable content, all that tells me is to wait 6 months until they re-release the game with all of the downloadable content, and it's $20 extra less.
Hey, can somebody say Arkham Asylum? Arkham City. Sorry.
I got the first run of Arkham City for PS3. I think right. I played it for like 3 hours, and then I had to stop. And then what happened was I went to buy my brother a copy of Arkham City for his Xbox, and I was so jealous because the one I got him was the Game of the Year edition with all of the downloadable content right. and costumes. And it only cost me $20 on a Black Friday sale. So I'm like, you know what? Unless it's the new Madden or the new show, I'm waiting until it drops. I have a rule about $60 games. I'll only pay $60 for a game, you know, that is either it basically has to be a sports game, either Madden or the show, because everything else I don't really have the time for, and it's just most of the time it's just on my shelf. So that means to me that I should only pay $20 for something that I have no idea when I'm going to have the time to play it.
Right.
It's going to come.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I mean, you're absolutely correct in this. I mean, you know, I'm like, you know, it happened to me because I'm trying to think what game I bought. It might have been, I think, what was it, Assassin's Creed, The Brotherhood? There were two versions of it.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think it was the one that was based in Italy. So I think that was Assassin's Creed 2. And I bought it, and it was great. And then later, they released another version. It was called the Game of the Year edition. Yep. And I thought to myself, what the hell is the Game of the Year edition? So I look at it, I read the back, and it has everything on it. Like all this extra stuff, and including masks and weapons and hovercraft or whatever, you know, Da Vinci's flying machine. And I'm just like, are you serious? Like, that game costs $59 plus tax, you know. And then they release a better version of it for $19.99. I'm like are you serious? So when that Game of the Year version comes out and you go to GameStop, right, they'll give you like $5 for the original one,
right?
You know, I'm like, what? Like,
yeah, and so the Game of the Year editions ruin the aftermarket value of the original games, and then these people want to turn around and tell us that we're not going to let you play used games on our system.
Dude, I mean, if that happens to be the case, they're going to suffer. The only people who are going to buy these new systems are the hardcore gaming community, mm-hmm. and everybody else, the casual gamers, and the people who treat, you know, their games like appliances, which a lot of people do. A lot of people I know who have Xboxes for the Kinect, they use it for exercise. A lot of people I know who have the PlayStation 3, they bought it for the Blu-ray player, as you mentioned. You know, they didn't really care so much about the gaming side. If you take away all those things, right, and all you have is a core gaming system without any incentive for the casual gamer, and not just that, but if you don't have any incentive for the long-term gamers who basically don't spend full price on anything, you're going to cut off a large percentage of your potential buying audience, and I think that's what's going to really happen. You know, and I think Microsoft and PlayStation really need to wake up and listen to their customer base. You have to listen to your audience. Every time any company does not listen to their audience, they fall apart. And that's just history proves me right there, you know. Now, what are you into right now? What games are you really, you know, jumping into right now?
Well, right now, since football season is over, I'm transitioning away from Madden NFL, so I'll probably be moving back into the show pretty soon. I try to do one sports game and one other game. Me and my wife actually play Little Big Planet. Mm-hmm. Quite a bit, which again is it's a very old school game. I mean, it's a four player game if you want it to be. You know, everybody gets to play at the same time and have a similar experience. So that's pretty much the one we're into now, Little Big Planet 2, because we finished the first one. So I usually try to, I have a sports game I'm playing a lot, and then I have a kind of like a floating game that I play occasionally. But I still have the, you know, the Mario Brothers bug. I mean, I still love platformers. I'm not a big first-person shooter fan. I love platformers. I love, you know, games like Prince of Persia, especially when they did the revamp. Like 5 or 6 years back, The Sands of Time. You know, I thought that was a tremendous game. So I'm a big fan of platformers, and then also obviously Zelda. I mean, I'll love Zelda until the end of time. I mean, everything about that game. I mean, I have the Zelda book that just came out. I have like the limited edition Zelda soundtrack that came with the last game that released on the Nintendo Wii with the gold Wiimote. So I'm a huge Zelda head. But like you said, I don't have time to play it. So I usually will play it right after I buy it. I'll play it once and then I'll get busy, and who knows? It might be, you know, 6 to 9 months before I have the chance to pick it up again. But like I said, I feel strange not having a game system in the house. So I have to get something. It just makes me, I feel like I'll feel diminished if I look up one day and it's like, man, I don't even have a game system anymore. I guess it's over for me. I'm just old, and you know, and now right. I'm busy with other things, and it's...
Man, I mean, God, I can tell you, man, my uncle actually bought me the gold edition, first edition Nintendo Legend of Zelda on the original NES. And that game, along with Castlevania, changed my life. Because, I mean, at least my gaming life, I mean, my real life was fine.
Right.
You know, but
I mean, let's get that straight.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing was that I'm playing a game where the world felt so tangible, and it was so weird that it was this little bizarre, a pixelated alternate universe fantasy realm, but it felt so real. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there was a certain charm to it that I didn't get from any other game. And then, you know, the fact that you had to do all these logic puzzles, the yep. fact that the world of Hyrule was so big, you know, comparatively speaking,
yep.
you know, and the fact that you had to accomplish so much, and you know, it really challenged me on a level that no game had. I mean, you play Atari 2600, you basically have to supply the imagination, because I don't know if you ever seen a 2600.
Oh, I have.
Yeah, every game is a series of blocks. So it's a block that's supposed to be a tank, or a block that's supposed to be a human, or a block that's supposed to be an airplane, and it makes a really crazy sound that's supposed to approximate what that thing was, but clearly it wasn't that. So it was like basically what looked like a baseball home plate, you know, with a bullet, with a little bullet shooting out of it. So that was supposed to be a tank,
right.
You know. And you're just like, you know, you have to imagine, you have to bring your imagination to it. But you play Legend of Zelda, and my God, you have this experience where, first of all, it looked really cool, you know. It had, you know, all these traps. You know, you had to go do things. You know, you go into this cave. You had to find caves. You go into the cave. The old man gives you a riddle. You had to figure out what that meant without cheating. Because basically, I had to get Nintendo Power because I got lost so many times.
Oh,
in Hyrule, you know.
My subscription to Nintendo Power for years.
There you go. And then you had, you know, Castlevania comes along, and that was like the hardest game I'd ever played in my life.
Yes.
And the fact that you had, you know, like you're fighting Dracula and Death and Frankenstein and Medusa heads and, you know, like fishmen. And it was all so cool. You know, it was so innovative. You know what I mean? And right now, like when I think about that type of innovation, I jump ahead. I already mentioned, you know, Shenmue, which was on the the Sega Dreamcast, which was an amazing game.
It was. You
know, it was like a life simulator on a completely different level. I mean, even better than Grand Theft Auto, because Shenmue had a really cool story, and it was a redemptive story. It wasn't a story about being a criminal,
right.
You know. And while I'm on that subject, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Grand Theft Auto series because I feel that it cheats in a lot of ways. You know, like you could have a game that taught somebody something. Because a lot of the games all had morals, you know, when I think about it. And you look at Grand Theft Auto, and especially the later ones, and you could murder hookers after you have sex with them in order to get your money back. And some people think that's funny, but when I first heard of it, I thought it was a joke. I didn't think that was something somebody would actually program into a game. You know what I mean? And it makes me wonder, how do we value life? You know what I mean? Like, it's like the people at the hell are they called? I can't believe I just blanked on this. The guys who develop Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, Rockstar.
Like the people at Rockstar Games, I mean, I'm pretty sure they think it's cute. But, you know, I go back to my teaching years. When I taught middle school and I had 10 and 11 and 12-year-old boys coming in talking about how they raped and murdered hookers and thought it was funny, I thought to myself, I'm like, your parents let you buy that? I mean, it has an M on it for a reason, you know? So, I mean, I'm not trying to get too serious or dark about things, but I think about that when I'm playing a game like, let's say, even Resident Evil, and you're not raping and murdering anybody, you're just killing zombies and monsters. You know, so it makes me wonder, you know, like, where is all this going? And so when I play a game like Shenmue, which had some really cool redemptive qualities to it, it was just an amazing adventure. You know, I think back to other games that have innovation, you know, and I'm not seeing that. And I'm going to go back to the beginning. I'm not seeing that kind of innovation anymore. I'm not seeing games that really challenge me mentally without being incredibly hard like Myst. You know, I don't know if you ever played. I mean,
I've never played Myst, but I've heard it's crazy hard.
Let me tell you a story about Myst. I encountered Myst in the middle of my college career. Now, I'm not a genius by any stretch of the imagination, okay? But I'm not an idiot either. But when I played Myst, I felt like I was the stupidest human being on earth because the way it's set up, you have to do a series of puzzles, logic puzzles, in order to advance the story. But those puzzles are fucking impossible. You know, there's no way. I'm sorry, dude. You have to see this. Like, if you can get past the first level without cheating, I will send you a gold medal. Because, dude, man. Anyway, so that's how I feel about
that. Awesome. But yeah, man. I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I'm an optimist, so I always feel that that somebody is gonna surprise us, and maybe this next generation of gaming will present some surprises and more than just shooting things in the head. And that seems to be what the gaming industry is now. You know, you just shoot things and move on to the next one. And the settings around you just change. Either you're in the Middle East, or you're in space, or you're in the snow, but the point is to basically shoot and kill things. And it just didn't seem like that was the case in some of the earlier some of the earlier gaming systems that we all love. But right. We'll see what happens, but it'll be exciting. Like I said, even though I don't necessarily have the time for it that I would like to, I still make sure that I'm plugged into what's going on. I still have my subscription to, you know, well, now it's Game Informer. I switch magazines occasionally, but now it's Game Informer. So I still feel like I know what's going on, but it's just kind of, it just makes me kind of nostalgic. Like, oh, you know, I wish I was, you know, 15 and still had all the time in the world and I could just sit down and just play these games forever. But, you know, it just makes you think, you know, like, oh, man, these kids are so spoiled now. I mean, you could even say the same thing about me, where I missed the 2600 generation and jumped right to Nintendo. But now I'm looking at it like, these kids can start out having a PS3? This is the first system they've ever seen? Right. So, you know, it's one of those things. But it's a huge part of pop culture now. I mean, despite the insane prices and the sequelitis, and hopefully they'll give us something. They'll give us something different in this next big generation. So again, when Xbox gets ready to announce their new thing, I'll be streaming that conference too. And, and like, oh, that would be so cool, but I probably won't be able to buy it. But that's okay, you know. Someone else will get to enjoy it. But I mean, I think the things that the games today are really lacking. Or like you said, that arcade experience, man. I mean when I was a kid, I used to go. I was in love with those with the four person button mashers, like the Ninja Turtles game and the Simpsons game and the X-Men game. And right. He used to have birthday parties at the arcade, and I would have my parents just buy us like $30 in tokens, and we would just sit on the game and play it until we finished it. And right. That's the type of thing I remember about video games. Like, that's the type of experience that I really enjoyed. And there's just really nothing like that anymore. And online is trying desperately to replace it, but it's not the same as when we were young. You know, I'll just put my old man hat on. So,
well, you know what's funny? What we haven't talked about was mobile gaming.
Yeah.
You know, and in the sense that a lot of the experiences that we, you know, talk about are found in the mobile gaming universe, but I just don't have that connection to the mobile gaming world because, once again, you know, both of us, we're not of that mobile gaming generation.
Yeah.
I mean, mobile gaming really took off, and it's very interesting, amongst young girls and women who had, you know, games on their phones and their iPads and things of that nature. And that market has exploded. And I think that what we're talking about in terms of that personal singular adventure, like a Contra or a Sonic the Hedgehog type of thing, you know, you're finding that in the mobile gaming realm. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm not a fan of mobile gaming because, one, none of my devices are strong enough or powerful enough to really, I mean, realistically, I mean, I have some really cool stuff, but none of it's really that good that where I want to sit down and for 4 or 5 hours have my head hunched over my phone. That's just not my thing. But, you know, I mean, I do agree that, you know, there's a lot of cool things out there now. I think that the next generation may have some surprises for us. Right now, though, from what I saw from PlayStation 4, they didn't really shock me. They didn't really make me sit up. I mean, the only thing that's really, like I said before, is Destiny, which is being developed by Bungie, who also, you know, created Halo. And Destiny looks like the type of game where it's not a massively multiplayer online game like a World of Warcraft or StarCraft type of situation, but it does reward cooperative play. So I kind of like a game where you can come in and out when you want with your friends, mm-hmm. and the game, you don't need to like be there at like 8 p.m. or else something huge is going to happen and you're going to miss it. You know, I have friends who, you know, actually I don't talk to them anymore because they play World of Warcraft almost exclusively. And before that, you know, like they played, you know, before that they played EverQuest, which was pretty much the same type of environment. Uh-huh. You know, and you know, I used to ask them, I'm like, you know, why are you taking this so – I mean, I have a friend who says he wants to be a writer, right? He said, the reason I say he claims or says he wants to be a writer is because he's always playing RPGs 24 hours a day. So I'm saying, thinking to myself, how are you making money, one, and two, how are you writing anything when you play video games all the time? And then he never answers that. But, you know, he always says, I'm going to be writing this, I'm working on this, but it's been, what, 10 years and he hasn't put anything on the market yet, so who knows? But one day I asked him, why are you never free? And he says, well, I got to be somewhere at 8 o'clock. Now, I'm thinking this guy has a hot date or something like that. I'm thinking, hey, well, you know, did you meet somebody nice? He's like, no. And I'm like, well, where are you going at 8 o'clock? He's like, well, we're going on this mission. And I'm like, what mission? He's like, well, we got to go and kill this orc or something. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I thought he was doing like live, you know, like the where people dress up like in that right. movie. Yeah, what was that
like
movie?
Like the reenactments.
Yeah. But what was that movie that came out with Sean William Scott and Paul Rudd where they had to – they had to take those two boys, and they were like they were sentenced to community service, so they were big brothers.
Oh, and
Jane Lynch was in it.
I forget.
You know Ken. What was it called? And they had the little black kid who smacked the dude, the really bad black kid. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Right, and I can't remember the name of the movie. Anyway, the point is, in that one of the characters dressed up in like medieval gear, and they would go out and they would do the whole Renaissance fair and they would play fight, and I thought that he was doing something like that, which I think is cool, right? I would never do that, but I think it's cool.
It's called now, role models.
Yeah, but or LARPing, is it LARP, live action? Yeah, LARP, live action role playing. So I thought he was doing that, and he's like, no, I got to be in front of my computer. So I'm thinking, is it pornographic? You know, is he lying to me? But no, he was doing World of Warcraft. He had his people from across the world, and they all decided to meet up and go on this quest. And I thought, you know, that's kind of cool, but I'm like, dude, like, this can't be your whole life. You know, you got to, like, go outside, man. I mean, there's people. You know, if I don't know. I mean, that's how I kind of – I don't know. But I'm just hoping that the next generation – my point is I hope the next generation
– is a little less of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would really like to see a kind of I don't know. We can't return to 1986. That's not going to happen. We also can't return to 1999 when the Dreamcast and PlayStation 2 came out. But I think that there has to be something said for a really good singular experience that is not trying to rip off the customer with DLC. I mean, I would like a game to come out that's just the game itself, and you don't have to worry about anything else. You don't have to worry about playing multiplayer. You don't have to worry about putting in codes. You just want to turn on your system, pop the game in, and start. And we can't even do that anymore. You know, because when you buy a PlayStation 3 or Xbox 360, you have to register the goddamn thing.
Yes,
and if you don't have an email address that is recognized by either Microsoft system or Sony, then you have to set up an email address just to get on that network.
Yep.
And that stinks. I mean, that really fucking stinks. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I hate to curse, but I mean, when I found out that I had to do that years ago, it made me angry. And what's even crazy is that now my AOL – I have many email accounts, but my old AOL address used to be my main account. And when I first signed up for Xbox Live, it accepted AOL accounts. They no longer accept AOL accounts as your email for Xbox Live. I mean, like, why? Like, am I? Do they hate Windows? I mean, do they hate AOL, America Online? Like, I mean, what's going on here? I mean, you know, I feel like our power as gamers is being systematically stripped away, and I'm hoping that the next generation does not continue this course. But it does look like that's the case.
Well, let's hope not. I think there was some game company. Wasn't there a slogan like "Power to the Players"? Was that Sony or Xbox? I feel like that was a slogan.
No, "Power to the Players" was the hellacious a GameStop logo. I mean,
I'm sorry. That's even funnier.
Yes, power to your to their pocketbook. That's about it.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, well, we began with GameStop and accidentally ended with GameStop. So
here we go, bro.
I think that's a good place for us to stop. So
yes, as always, this is Brandon Easton.
This is Brandon Thomas, and this has been the Two Brandons, episode 2. So I hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Please, please pass it around, share the links, let everybody know where it is. And thank you. Thank you kindly.
Take care.